Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. Today, we're going to be sharing a ton of absolutely, allegedly true, and terrifying in the woods horror stories. If this happened in the woods, it's going to be in this video, that's for sure. I'm going to try to make this a more regular occurrence where we just compile a bunch of new stories into one super long video. So if you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going on a daily basis. Now, without further ado, be sure to hit that like button, subscribe if you're new, and get ready for these creepy and allegedly true in the woods horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, I don't know about you, but I have definitely benefited from having somebody to talk to from time to time. Whether it's on a weekly basis, or a bi-weekly basis, or even a daily basis from time to time, I feel like it's extremely valuable to have this resource at your hands at any time. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you, so you can do more of it. Again, I love BetterHelp. I love having the option to talk to a therapist when I need to have it. And I love the option of being able to pull back when I don't think I need it as much. It's always nice to have that helping hand, somebody to talk to, but it is nice to not have to feel obligated to do it. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/swamped today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/swamped. This story has been on my mind to tell for a while now. It was a very calm night. We lived in the woods at the end of a long, dark road. It was a dirt road, so when it rained, getting down was horrible. Our family only owned one old pickup truck, which would get stuck and we would have to try to get it out of the dirty mud road all the time. So, mostly on rainy days, we were stuck at home. It was my mom, dad, two older sisters, and three older brothers. So, I was the youngest, the baby if you will. That night, my brother Willie and I sat on the porch throwing bread from the porch down to the dogs. The moon was bright, so we could see it through the moonlight despite being in the deep woods. It started getting late, and our father called us in for the night. We never really went to bed, though. He just didn't like leaving us alone outside. After everybody was in bed, the night seemed peaceful and relaxing. With the rain tapping on the roof, everything started to change sometime around 2 a.m. I heard a car in the distance ramming up its engine. The sound of the vehicle became closer and closer. I sat in my window to see the car lights coming up the dirt road. I was half asleep and not really processing what I was seeing. When I came to myself, I realized this car was going really fast. This was impossible. We couldn't even get our pickup truck 2 feet down this road without getting stuck, and this car had to be going at least 80 miles per hour. Suddenly, the car was almost at the house and wasn't slowing down. As it passed the house, I closed my ears expecting to hear a crash. I ran to the bedroom and to the front door, waiting to hear about a collision, explosion, or something. I opened the door to see absolutely nothing. I stepped onto the patio, and there was nothing. Beyond the porch, there were woods, trees, thick oaks, and pines. There was no way they could have turned around in time. Just then, my father walked up and stared at me. "What are you doing here?" I tried to tell him what I saw, but he looked down the dirt road and didn't really see anything. There was no turnoff or side road or anywhere for a car to hide. We went back inside, and I tried to convince myself that it was just some sort of weird dream. Days passed, and I started to forget about the car. But 2 weeks later, we had another rainstorm. And it was like exactly that night 2 weeks ago. Rainy and clear, I went to bed and awakened to find my father looking strangely at the table. I greeted him, and my mother eventually came in, but she looked confused as well. My mother then asked me about the car I saw a couple of weeks ago. I told my mother and father about it again as we were at the store, which was repeated the last couple of days after it happened. Apparently, early in the morning, my dad had seen the exact same thing I did. And now, I had felt vindicated. What was this ghost car in the middle of the woods on rainy nights? I couldn't tell you. I never really saw it again. But apparently everybody in my family saw it at least once. This happened some months ago. Sometime around November. I live in northern Italy. So, that was the evening in which the red aurora borealis appeared visible to us. I was chilling at home after a long day when one of my friends called me and asked if I wanted to see the aurora with him. I said sure because I'm always up for an adventure. And from where I live, on the top of a mountain, which is about an hour car away from a near city, it would be nice to go out into the woods and see this. At 7:30, he comes to get me and up we go. We even see a cute chunky fox while ascending. We arrived at the top mountain where there's a parking lot and we get out of the car. It was pretty cold, freezing with winds howling. We encountered only one car on the road the entire time, and there was only one car parked away far from us. Apparently, it was empty or just dark, one or the other. We tried to take some pictures. We can't really see the aurora, just some reddish specks of light here and there, but it was still magical. However, we can see a beautiful Milky Way. So, despite the cold, we stood there in admiration of the universe above us, chatting slightly. After around an hour, I began to feel uneasy, not for any reason in particular. My friend decides he needs to go pee a short distance away and remains in sight. I concentrate on the surroundings as I'm used to giving credit to my internal voice. So, I suddenly started picking up on something. I hear footsteps. Every time the wind goes down, they go silent, but a little Every time the wind goes down, they go silent, but a little bit delayed. I can clearly distinguish them as the icy snow crunches under the weight and the wind picks up in strength. I tell my friend when he comes back and we listen, and he confirms it as they're getting progressively closer. We made eye contact and decided enough was enough, and we saw enough stars for that night. We didn't want to stay around to find out what was stalking us. We calmly walked to the car, locked the doors, and booked it out of there safely. So the other night, on a small mountain trail I've gone to for years to watch the sunset, I felt like some guy was tracking me back to my car. This is my first time in my entire life hiking alone, and I've done some sketchy stuff alone at dusk that I felt uneasy doing. So the mountain trail I go to is pretty long with many different side trails, but there is one main trail that goes straight up and down the center of the mountain, which is usually pretty quick to get up and down, and usually I like to go there to see the sunset when I have the time. I've done it hundreds of times at this point, and honestly I didn't think it would be any different this time. I often watch the sunset and walk back to my car in the pitch black. I never felt uneasy the way that I did it that night, but something was different. I get to the peak, I walk back down to my usual viewing spot of the sunset, and suddenly, some guy who was also alone comes out of one of the side trails. I don't really think anything of it, you know, minding my own business. We exchange a few words from a distance. The guy gets on his way, and I can see him as a tiny dot as he gets down to the bottom of the trail. But I thought, well, there's only one way out of here. He knows I'm still up here. So I knew I wasn't sticking around for it to get dark. The last minute that the sun goes behind the mountain, I start walking down. As you get closer to the bottom of the trail, a section narrows and there's nothing but woods and trees on each side before it opens up again to a vast open dirt trail and the parking lot. Heads on a swivel the entire way down. I get to the creepy, dark, narrow part of the trail just before it opens up into the parking lot, and I hear someone make a noise. Like a weird noise. I see no one, so I get about halfway onto the open dirt road, almost to the parking lot, and turn around, but someone is decently far behind me out of nowhere. I don't look back again. I pick up the pace, get to my car, and book it. There was only one truck left in the parking lot by the time I got back, and it was on, and someone was definitely in the driver's seat. Call me paranoid, but again, I've never felt uneasier like that at all my entire life. I don't know what could have happened that night, but I'm 80% sure that somebody was trying to get me. I was homeless for a few years, from 18 to 21, and I used to stay in a tent with my ex. Eventually, I had to end up moving my tent spot because the cops would find us. Either way, I spent much time in the woods at night. One night, when walking back to my tent, I heard something down the trail a bit. I shone my light toward the sound, and was met with a glowing eye reflecting my flashlight. However, where the eyes were made it so it had to have been at least as tall as me, and I was 5'8". There was no way there was an animal that tall in my area. I turned to my ex and told him to start going to the tent faster. He could tell something was off, so he asked if I was all right. I told him I'd say more when we got to the tent, because I would have not told him anything while we were out there in the middle of the woods, and I also think acknowledging creatures' spirits or whatever gives them more power. Then, some nights, there would be a smacking on our tent. It would be like on all sides of the tent at the same time. We would look out the tent and there would never be anything there, and we would never hear any footsteps or find anything. Another night, during the summer, we decided to go for a small hike at night because it was honestly super nice out that night, and it had been the first real nice night for many, many weeks. After about a 15-minute hike, I started to feel paranoid, as if we were being watched by something or someone. After about 5 minutes, I heard a maniacal laughter somewhere deep in the woods. I couldn't pinpoint the exact direction. My partner asked what was that, and I loudly said, "I don't know, but whatever it is, it needs to stop." As soon as I said this, multiple maniacal laughs started, and my partner and I turned around and walked back to what felt like the longest 20 minutes of my life. We never really did figure out what was going on in the woods that night, but I could tell you this, we stopped camping in the deep woods and started camping in public campgrounds as much as we could. I had always been fascinated by the great outdoors and the beauty of nature, so when I heard about Yosemite National Park growing up, I knew I had to go. I packed my gear and I set out on a hiking and fishing trip, excited to explore the park's crystal clear streams, towering trees, and breathtaking scenery. I had been hiking for quite a few hours, taking in sights and sounds of the forest when I realized that I had lost my way at some point. The trail that had been guiding me seemed to just disappear, and I couldn't find any markers to guide myself back. I tried retracing my steps, but the forest was just too dense, and I couldn't tell which way was which. Panic began to set in, and I began to realize that I was lost. As I walked, I noticed that the trees seemed to be getting closer together, and the forest was becoming darker altogether. The sound of the babbling brook that had been guiding me was fading away slowly, and I was left with an eerie silence that only amplified my fear. After some time, I stumbled upon a clearing, and in the middle of it was an old cabin. It looked abandoned, and I hesitated before going in. The door creaked as I pushed it open, and the smell of mildew hit me. The inside was dusty, and the furniture was covered with cobwebs. It was clear that no one had been here in quite some time. I decided to make camp inside the cabin for the night, hoping to find my way out of the forest in the morning. I was lucky to find a place that was dry. I got a fire going in the fireplace and began to make myself comfortable for the night. And as the warmth of the flames washed over me, I felt a sense of relief. But as the night went on, my sense of safety would begin to fade. The silence was unnerving, and I kept hearing strange noises coming from outside the cabin. It sounded like something was walking around the perimeter, and I could hear the occasional snap of a twig or rustling of leaves. I tried to convince myself that it was just some sort of animal, but the fear was too immense. As the night wore on, the noises became more frequent and more prevalent. I realized that I wasn't alone here. I could hear something moving around outside the cabin, and it was not my mind playing tricks on me. I felt the sense of dread wash over me. It sounded like something was trying to break in, scratching and clawing at the walls ever so slightly. I tried to ignore it the best I could, but the fear was far too great. I lay in my sleeping bag, heart racing, my eyes darting around the room looking for anything. Every time I thought the noises had stopped and would begin to close my eyes, they would immediately start back up again, even louder and more intense than before. It was like it was playing mind games with me. It knew when I was about to fall asleep. Finally, the noises stopped altogether, and I was left with an even more creepy, eerie silence. I tried to convince myself that everything was okay, but the feeling of unease just lingered. It never really relented. I decided that I couldn't stay in the cabin any longer, and then I had to find my way out of this forest ASAP. As I stepped outside, I saw a figure in the distance standing amongst the trees. It was dark and tall, and it seemed to be staring at me. I immediately stopped, stared right back at it, and the figure vanished into the forest. I ran in the opposite direction, trying to find my way out of the park, but the forest seemed to be alive all around me, and it was as if it was trying to keep me trapped inside its depths. I had heard more strange noises, and I had saw more shadowy figures in the distance. It was like I was living in a nightmare. The night was long, and my body was tired, but I knew I had to keep moving. I stumbled upon a river and followed it. This was my last hope. I was really hoping it would lead me out of the forest, but the river was treacherous and the rocks were slippery. I fell several times, bruising my knees and scraping my hands. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, a lifetime if you will, I saw a faint light in the distance. My heart leapt with hope, and I began to run towards it with all I had. As I got closer, I realized that it was a campsite. There were a few tents set up, and I could see the glow of a campfire. I stumbled into the camp, gasping for breath, and the campers looked up in surprise. They were a group of three friends who had been hiking in the park for a few days now. They gave me a fair chance and listened to my story, and their faces were full of concern. They offered me a hot meal and a place to sleep for the night, and as I sat by the fire, I felt the tension in my body begin to ease just ever so slightly. I was grateful for their kindness and for the safety of their company. The next morning, I set out with their group, determined to find my way out of the forest. They were experienced hikers and knew the park well, and they helped me navigate the trails. We hiked for a couple of hours, and I could feel the relief wash over me as we got closer to the park entrance. As we emerged from the forest, I looked back at the towering trees, dense undergrowth, and everything that I had gone through, and the fear I had felt the night before seemed distant and unreal, like a dream that had faded with the morning light. I thanked the group for their help profusely and set out on a long journey back home. As I drove away from the park, I couldn't help but think that the strange occurrence of that night before, maybe it was just my imagination, or was there something more sinister lurking in the forest? The memory of that night stayed with me for a long time, and I couldn't help but feel a sense of unease. Whenever I thought about it, I would get nightmares. But despite the fear and uncertainty, I knew that I would return to Yosemite National Park one day. The beauty and majesty of the park were too great to resist, the lure of the wilderness was way too strong, and plus I had to go pick up my camping gear eventually. I never thought I'd be the kind of person to break the law, but the thought of catching a monster-sized fish was too tempting to resist. So when my friend told me about a private lake where he had heard rumors of fish that weighed more than 100 pounds, I just couldn't resist. We decided to sneak in at night, thinking we wouldn't get caught. It wasn't long before we found ourselves at the edge of the lake, our rods in hand and our hearts pounding excitedly. The lake was completely still. The only sounds were the occasional chirping of crickets and the soft lapping of the water against the shore. As we cast our lines into the water, I couldn't help but feel like we were doing something wrong. But the thrill of the catch was way too much to ignore. After only a few minutes' time, I felt a tug on my line. I reeled it in as fast as possible, my heart pounding excitedly, thinking I got something good. But as the fish approached the surface, I realized something was not quite right here. The fish was gigantic, but it also was covered in strange, pulsating bumps. As I got a closer look at it, I saw that they were not just bumps, but rather they were growths. It was clear that this fish was sick and suffering. I couldn't bring myself to even touch it, let alone keep it. The sight of it was too much for me to bear. I cut my line and sat back down on the shore, racing about what could have caused such a grotesque mutation. But then I heard something that made my blood run absolutely cold. It was a loud growl coming from somewhere behind me. I turned slowly, my heart pounding in my ears. That's when I saw it. It was a creature unlike anything I'd ever seen in my lifetime. The body was covered in matted fur. Its eyes glinted in the moonlight. It looked like a wolf, but was much larger, and something about how it moved made me feel like it was not entirely natural. I realized right then and there that we were not alone in this place. We were trespassing in the territory of some kind of monster, and it was clear that it was not happy about it. My friend and I ran as fast as we could. We were never thinking about looking back, hearts pounding, literally felt like we were going to die at any second. We didn't stop until we were back in our car, and even then, we didn't feel safe. We hauled it out of there. That night, I realized that there are some things better left unseen. The memory of that mutated fish and the creature we encountered in the woods will haunt me for the rest of my life. But it wasn't until a few days later that I discovered the true horror of what we had stumbled upon. I was scrolling through the news on my phone when I came across a story about a local laboratory that had been shut down due to illegal experiments on animals. The laboratory was allegedly just a few miles away from that private lake where we had gone fishing. The article described the experiments as gruesomely, including creating animal mutants through genetic manipulation. My stomach churned as I made the connection. The sick fish we had seen and the unnatural creature in the woods were all the result of illegal experiments that had taken place at that laboratory, and I was sure of it. I couldn't shake the feeling that we had narrowly escaped something far worse that night, and I couldn't help but wonder what other horrors were hidden in the woods around us, waiting to be discovered by unsuspecting visitors like ourselves. I'm a park ranger, but I'm intentionally leaving my name and the park's name out of this post. The names of all those involved have been changed as well. I needed to get this story out there, but could not rely on conventional avenues. That's why I'm posting it here. I could lose my job or much worse, but this story has to be told. I owe it to Catherine. I arrived at the ranger station like any other day. I was given my section of the park to patrol. Unfortunately, the park is massive, and my section usually includes half of it, so there isn't much chance for strolls on the trails. I hopped in my work vehicle, a 10-year-old 4x4, and headed down to see if anyone needed assistance. It didn't take long to find someone. At the first campground, a man couldn't get his camper started. A quick jump got him rolling along. Next was a couple needing directions, then an overturned canoe. I had only made it a few miles through the park at this point. I would have to move if I hoped to make an entire route today. I grabbed a few quick bites of lunch and put some miles on without anyone needing help when the call came over the radio. A hiker had found something, and I needed to go check it out. A half hour later, I talked to a middle-aged woman who had made a concerning discovery. She found a hat and a note on the trail. I read the letter. "I'm writing this note and leaving it behind because I'm not sure what's happening. The five of us friends have been planning this trip forever, even since long before our graduation. But it's always seemed like something came up the last minute and one or more of us could not go. I was almost convinced that some outside force had been working against us for a while. We were cursed to not go camping together until we were too old to enjoy it. I could picture Devin now. He would still go even if he was too old to walk and suffer on the trail. He's always up for camping. I think the guy carries a loaded backpack in his car with himself everywhere he goes. Adrian got here right behind us, followed soon by Dean. Of course, Terry was last to show. We started up the trail in great spirits. 3 miles in, the sun was just starting to heat up. We were making good times toward the rustic campground when Devin decided to take a detour. He said he had heard about an old trail that no one used anymore and wanted to check it out. I said we should keep going the way we were, but I was outvoted. I honestly don't think Terry's vote should have counted since he was stoned, and Devin just bullied him into saying yes. We came to a spot with a large stone off the trail's side. Devin said it was the trailhead, but I didn't see any path. He led us through some heavy brush, but on the other side it cleared out. We could see the faint impression of an overgrown trail. I went last and left my hat on the stone just in case we got lost and if we need to be rescued. I think that's precisely where we're headed, straight toward being lost. I'll leave this note under my hat and hope that someone finds us. I asked the woman to show me where she had found it, and she showed me. 3 miles later, I was staring at the rock I had hoped I would never see again. I radioed my location to the station and told them if they didn't hear from me in a couple of hours to send a search party to the old abandoned trail. I wish I had brought my supplies with me. My backpack and sidearm were 3 miles away, and I didn't know how long these kids had been on this trail. I knew that Any wasted time could mean the difference between life and death, not only for myself, but for those kids. At least I had my knife, my flashlight, and binoculars. So I thanked the woman, placed the red hat back on the stone just in case, and headed into the heavy bush. Once through the initial overgrowth, the trail became more visible. Old memories flashed through my head, ones I'd never wanted to think about again. I took a deep breath and headed down the path. It was overgrown for the first mile and opened into a field. I could see people had walked before me because the weeds were partially trampled. As I walked through, a deer jumped ahead of me, startling me. Until that moment, I didn't realize how jumpy I was. I tried to settle down and tell myself that these kids were just lost and I could catch up to them and get them out. I was telling myself that, but that didn't make the memories go away. I entered a clearing with a fallen log and another note with a rock was sitting on it. Think I'm being silly. This trail isn't so bad. Maybe I was wrong. Devin seems to know where he's going. Just can't shake this feeling that we're being watched, you know? Sometimes I'll look around and I swear I see a face disappear behind a tree. Am I being paranoid? Maybe if the birds started singing again, that would lighten my mood. But I haven't heard any of the birds or any other animal for a while. I wonder why they're being so quiet. Are they afraid of us? On another note, Terry seems to be brooding more than usual. Maybe he forgot to bring enough of his stash to last the trip. Devin, in his glory, since everyone has to rely on him for directions. Adrienne and Dean seem to be along for the ride. However, I have noticed Dean looking around at the trees as well. Maybe I'll ask if he sees anything. If you're trying to track us down, I hope you aren't being too bothered. I just have this feeling things are gonna go wrong. I folded the note and stuck it in my pocket, then prayed she was wrong about being followed. I pushed on, beginning to miss my backpack with the supplies, especially the water bottles. The trees provided shade, so the sunlight wasn't shining directly on me, but hiking is always thirsty work. The birds chirping in the trees made me almost forget about the desperate mission I was on to save these five kids. My mind wandered back to the kid I couldn't help. It had been shortly after I started as a park ranger. An 11-year-old boy had gotten lost on this very trail. His parents searched for him before calling us to look. I remembered hoping to be the one to find him as we formed search parties and searched on, in, and around every inch of the trail. In the end, I got my wish. I found him, but I wish I hadn't. I pushed the memory to the back of my mind and focused on the trail. It was starting to fade. The trampling of feet wasn't making enough of a difference, and I was beginning to lose my way. Out here, that can be deadly. I kept moving forward and finally regained the trail just in time to reach the fork. I looked back and forth from one choice to the other and couldn't really see a difference between the two. I searched for any broken twigs or plants that would give me a hint, but there didn't seem to be any. Just when I was about to give up and flip a coin, I saw a piece of paper in the weeds, barely visible. I dug it out and read it. It seems like we have a dilemma, a fork in the road, as it were. You would think I would be happy to see the doubt in Devin's eyes as he looked from one choice to the other, but you'd be wrong. It made my confidence plummet. It made me think that we were never going to get out of here. Everyone's running out of water. Devin yelled at us for not conserving, but I saw him drink the last of his. He ranted and raved at us for a while, but we all knew he was just mad because he didn't know what to do. In the end, he flipped a coin. We all did our best not to laugh. Adrienne is reaching the end of her rope with Devin and his attitude. Dean has been playing peacemaker, trying to keep them off from going at it too much. Terry has been way too quiet. I haven't seen him light up once. Something's up with him. But he says it's nothing every time I ask. The birds still aren't singing, and it's bothering me to the core. This strange feeling I have hasn't gone away. I asked Dean if he had seen anything weird, but he won't talk about it. We've been on this trail for some time. I'm hoping to come to an end soon. In case the note got moved or blown around, we took the left trail. I was panicked by the end of reading that note, and was so relieved when she mentioned which path to take. I radioed in and reported that I was on the course of the missing hikers. I told them I was at the fork and that I took the left side. I was told that there was no search party going on yet, that I was the only one looking for these kids. It was the complete opposite of years ago, looking for that kid. Everyone was searching. I know we combed every inch of that wilderness, but that's the thing about the woods. You can search every nook and cranny visible, but something can still stay hidden. The sun was going down, and I still had no idea how close I was to catching up to these kids. I could stumble across them in the next clearing, or they could be hours ahead of me. I met the woman who showed me the hat and note in the afternoon. If they started around daybreak, they could be 5 or 6 hours ahead of me. If the leader is driven to continue, it's hard to say how far they might be. I continued following the trail until I saw a fallen tree across a river. I looked both ways along the river's edge but didn't see a path, so I crossed the tree. I could picture the debate the kids had when they got there. I chuckled at the thought of Devin having to convince them to go across. I believe I made up a lot of time with that single crossing. I jumped into the water, drank my fill, and climbed back up feeling much, much better. It was tough to pick up on the trail on the other side. I was glad to find a note sticking to a branch. Oh my gosh, Devin just about came unglued when we got to the tree over the river. He hopped up right away and started to cross, but the rest of us weren't so sure that the trail led that way. We asked him how he would obviously know this, but he said he planned this fallen tree as a part of it. He sputtered, stomped, and told us that we would be lost without him. Dean had finally had enough and told him we were lost because of him. I thought Devin would swing at him until Terry came to his side and told Devin to shut up. The rest of us all came together and told Devin he could keep leading us as long as he stopped acting like a freaking petty tyrant. He didn't take that too well, though. In the end, he told us we could all go to hell. He sat on the log and refused to move. Eventually, we took a break, refilled our water bottles in the river, and Dean said we should keep going and led us across the tree. Devin followed along, acting like a whipped puppy. Dean and I talked about the disappearing face we had seen a while back, but neither of us had seen it again. At least the birds were back singing. I chuckled, figuring that Devin would be a big baby over the whole thing. But after the chuckle came concern. Deposed leaders are usually dangerous. I wondered how much offense Devin had taken and how long it would take before he started getting some sort of payback in some small or large way. Darkness was coming on fast in the woods. I had to make a decision, camp for the night or keep going. If I camped, I could defend against the predators that lurked in the darkness. But if I kept moving, there was a good chance I could stumble across the group before daybreak. It wasn't much of a decision. These kids that I don't even know, that I had plunged headfirst into the woods without even my backpack of supplies. Of course, I was going to try and catch up with them. If I had done that years back, would that kid still be alive? Such thoughts nagged at me. Most days I kept them at bay, but here in this same forest, close to where I found him, I needed to focus. If I'm going to get after them, and I'm going to keep up, I need to get going. I stepped off the trail to take a pee and heard a metallic snap simultaneously, and I felt intense pain shoot at my leg. I looked down and I had stepped into a bear trap. I screamed, I fell to the ground and rocked back and forth in agony. After a few minutes, I refocused on getting the trap off of my leg. I found a branch and pried the weapon open, screaming the entire time. I pulled the surprise off my leg and threw it to the side. I didn't want to take my boot off, but I had to see the damage. It took every ounce of effort I could to muster enough to unlace that boot and pull it off. My leg was purple. I felt along the wound very gently, but there didn't seem to be any break. That didn't mean I wouldn't be limping for the next month, though. But it did mean I would buy this brand of boots for the rest of my life. Putting the boot back on took much, much more effort and screaming, but I knew I needed to keep going. I laced up the boot and found a sturdy branch to use as a crutch. I struggled to my feet and took my first few ginger steps. Once I got into the rhythm, it got more straightforward, but I couldn't walk as fast as I had been. Of course, when I was weakest, I heard footsteps in the trees close to me. I knew it had to be a predator, because it could probably sense how I was vulnerable and probably heard my screams of agony earlier. I leaned against a tree and held my crutch ready as a weapon. The footsteps came closer. They paused as if they knew I was ready, then slowly continued stalking me. They were deliberate but slow, each step seemed measured as if it were waiting for the right moment to strike. I heard it right next to the tree I was hiding behind. I whipped around as best as I could and raised the crutch to strike. A deer was staring at me for a heartbeat and then turned and ran through the forest. I collapsed against the tree and slid down to the ground, allowing the adrenaline to bleed off. I don't remember falling asleep. I woke to sandpaper scratching the side of my face. I opened and a bear was beside me, licking my cheek. I freaked out, screamed, and rolled away from it. The bear wasn't ready for that reaction. It startled and ran away. I slowly, but rapidly, contained my breathing and looked around. It was dark. Thin shafts of moonlight beaming through the trees provided a little bit of light. I checked my watch and it was nearly 4 a.m. I rose slowly and gingerly on my injured ankle, took the small flashlight out of my pocket, and prayed it still worked. My prayers were answered when the beam shone brightly through the woods. I panned around, trying to get my bearings. After a moment, I found the trail and started hobbling toward it. The nightly noises were a comfort. At least if the crickets were chirping and the rest of the forest was singing its nightly tune, predators likely weren't around. I stumbled and fell, hitting my injured ankle against a rock. The pain overwhelmed me and I screamed. After a few minutes of recovery, I got up and continued at a slower pace, paying more attention to the ground. I chided myself for falling asleep and losing so much time. At least the trail was easy to follow. I continued through the night, hoping I wasn't too late. I started thinking about the boy I had failed to rescue and what would happen if I failed to save these kids too. I'm sure the Rangers Department would say I did my best. I wasn't worried about them, it was me who I cared about. Would I be able to forgive myself for letting something happen again? My thoughts were interrupted when I stumbled into a clearing. Not just any clearing, there were remnants of a fire. There were impressions from tent pegs being pulled out of the ground. All around were the signs of a recent campsite, including a tent still set up entirely. I got so excited I nearly fell over my crutch. Looking around for signs of anything, the tent was a mixed blessing. It was very ominous that it was still here while the others were gone, but I could find some supplies to take along for my search. The most important was food. I shoved some protein bars in my pocket while devouring some beef jerky. I also grabbed 2 water bottles from the pack. I stumbled across a note sitting under a rock beside the smoldering fire. Before I sat, I held my hand out to the fire. It was still warm, but the embers were nearly dead. It had been hours since this fire was first lit. I would have thought that I could catch up with them if I hadn't taken such an unintentional nap. There was nothing I could do but sit by the dying fire and read the note, hoping there was good news. We found this clearing and decided to camp. Everyone was tired from walking, and the mood was somber because no one seemed to know where we were. We had been hiking in the forest before, but none of us had ever seen or heard of this trail. We set up our tents, started a fire, and then ate and sat around. No one felt like talking, so I tried to get the ball rolling by asking Terry why he was late. He hesitated, but at my prompting, eventually told us that he had hit an animal with his car on the way here. I asked if it was a deer, and he said no, it was much too big to be a deer. He said it was walking upright on 2 legs and was massive. Like 8 feet tall, massive, covered in brown hair. He swerved to miss it, but the strangest thing was is it seemed to try to jump out in front of him. Like, it wanted him to stop. We all listened with rapt attention. Just then, off in the distance, we heard a scream. We all froze. Devin started spouting off and yelling at Terry for trying to scare us, storming off. Dean tried to stop him, but he pushed him away and disappeared into the woods. The rest of us talked, trying to decide if we should look for him, but in the end we figured we would just let him go and cool off. We heard a rustling off in the distance and a muffled cry a short while later. We huddled a little closer together and went on high alert. Our eyes darted back and forth as we searched the impenetrable wall of trees surrounding us, looking for any signs of a predator. Right then, the strangest thing happened. All the nightly noises stopped. The crickets, the squirrels, the owls, and every sound you usually hear in the forest at night ceased. It was unnerving. For a moment, I wondered if I hadn't gone deaf. Our eyes darted all around in the darkness. We all huddled closer to the fire. Dean pulled out his hunting knife. None of us said a word. It was like if we spoke, something terrible would happen. Somehow, whatever caused the noises to stop would find us if we spoke. Someone did say, though just not who we expected,
"Why are you here?"
came a deep, raspy voice that seemed to echo from everywhere. We all looked around, and finally, a man, at least what I would like to call a man, stepped into the light. It was oversized, well over 6 feet tall, broad shoulders, and probably older than any of us combined. It was also wearing what looked like a park ranger's uniform. It looked old and shabby, like he had been wearing it for a long time. There were no name tags or park patches. At that point, we didn't care. We had been rescued. We clambered around him, saying how glad we were that they had found us. We told him about what was going on in the trail, and we weren't sure where we even were. The man listened, slowly saying,
"You shouldn't be here."
We all looked at each other, freaked out. I'm sure the others thought the same as me. No shit, we shouldn't be here. We just told you that. He looked at us from one to another, as if he were sizing us up. I was starting to get a little uncomfortable with this silence. I thought he would offer to guide us back, but he didn't. He kept staring. I think everyone else was getting a little edgy when Dean asked if he could point us in the right direction. He looked at Dean as if deciding to answer him or not.
I can guide you,
he said.
But first, you have to have some rest.
We all agreed that the day had been long and stressful. We decided to take his advice and turn it in. We offered him some food and water, but he refused, saying he wasn't hungry. We each went to our tents and laid down. Now, the one thing that just stayed on my mind was how weird his voice sounded. It sounded almost demonic, almost like something trying to pretend to be human. Before I settled in and finished this note, I popped my head back out of my tent to check on our guide. He was sitting by the fire, staring into the orange coals. I thought I heard him mumbling or maybe humming something softly. I quietly zipped up my tent and went to sleep. Sometime later, someone banged on my tent. I awoke and unzipped it to find the ranger with a strange look in his eyes.
We need to go.
Why? I said, rubbing the sleep out of my eyes.
It's not safe here,
he said with an edge of panic. I popped back into my tent to change, then came out and met with everyone. They were all in states of semi-consciousness as well. Everyone but the ranger seemed to be confused.
Pack up. We need to leave,
he said a little more forcefully. I was about to protest when I heard a piercing scream. His head shot up, and he stared in the direction of the sound.
Move it,
he said.
Back up.
We didn't need to be told again. The scream brought us all fully awake. We tore down our tents repeatedly and packed up everything into our backpacks. As I finished up, I noted Devin's tent was still standing up. Where's Devin? I said.
Who's Devin?
The ranger said. He's another one of our friends, I said. He went off into the woods right before you got here.
He didn't come back?
The ranger asked. Should we go look for him? I said. The ranger extended his arms and did a slow circle.
Which way would you go?
He said. I understood his point. How would we know where he had gone? If he was still on the path or not? It just seemed like we should do something. What about his gear? I said. Do we take it with us? The ranger looked at me, almost like he was annoyed at answering so many questions.
Leave it here, in case he comes back,
he said.
You'll need his supplies.
I'm not sure if I'll keep leaving notes or not now that we have a ranger to guide us. Whoever finds this, please look for Devin and make sure he's okay. After reading this note, I was perplexed. A ranger? All the rangers at this park are in their 30s or 40s. Maybe it was someone who retired and was just roaming around out here? But why would they be out here in the middle of the night? And why would they be in some sort of ranger's outfit? Sitting here by the dying embers of the fire, with a tent set up in front of me, it was very tempting to take a rest. If they're in the hands of a capable ranger, I could get some rest before the long hike back out of here. But I knew I already had taken my rest for the night. If not for that, I would have been here hours ago, probably before the other ranger. I set out again, feeling tired but determined. The campsite made me more hopeful than I had been all day. At least they were together and thinking like campers. If only I knew who this ranger was. The sun was an hour away from rising, so I took up my flashlight to follow the trail. I zipped up the tent before I left, just in case the owner returned. I wouldn't want animals getting in and taking everything. It's bad enough when injured park rangers do it. The trail stayed level for a while as dawn peeked over the tree slowly. The course started heading upward, which was terrible news for me and my bum ankle. It made things much harder, but I had my trusty makeshift crutch to help me. Dawn crept into the forest, giving me a little assistance. At least I wouldn't have to waste a hand on holding a flashlight. As the climb grew steeper, the trail grew more narrow. At times, it was only the width of a foot. As I scaled the narrow path, I held onto trees and whatever I could. At the most difficult, I paused and seriously considered turning back. As I looked around for any other way to keep going, I saw brightly colored fabric at the bottom of the ravine. I carefully balanced as I took out my binoculars and looked. It was a backpack, and attached to it was the body of a girl in her early 20s. She looked like she had hit her head on the rocks at the bottom. Her face was bloody and mauled. Her clothes were ripped and soaked in blood. There was no doubt that an animal had gotten to her. The only question was she alive when it started feeding on her? I looked away, but I felt my determination doubling down to find these missing kids. They might be with the ranger, but they were still in terrible danger. I slowly continued up the narrow trail. At this time, I was sure the ground would give out from under me, and I would share the same fate as that poor, unfortunate girl at the bottom of the ravine. It was then I remembered my radio. I tried to call in and report the location of the body, but the only response I got was static. I was determined to try again when I got to the top of the trail. It was yet another motivation to keep going, to be careful, to survive. It seemed like hours at a snail's pace, working my way up the side of the ravine. Finally, I clawed my way over the top of the edge. I rolled over onto the solid ground and lay there for a few minutes. Once I caught my breath, I got up slowly and painfully. I hadn't done my ankle any favors. I limped toward what looked like the trail and began following. It wasn't long before I came across the remnants of another campsite. Fire was a little warmer than the last one. I stoked it up, threw some more wood, and got it going. I knew I needed some rest. I searched around, found a note, then sat down on a log by the fire to read it. I can't believe Adrienne is gone. We started up the steep ravine, and the trail kept getting narrow. I asked the ranger if there was any other way around it, and he just glared at me and said no. We all struggled with our heavy packs on our back. At one point, I was on all fours just trying to keep from sliding into the ravine. That's when it happened. Adrienne was having trouble keeping her feet on the trail. She kept slipping. I reached out and helped her balance a few times. Being right in front of me, I kept an eye on her whenever possible. But to be truthful, I wasn't watching nearly as much as I wanted because I was watching my own feet. She slipped once, I tried to grab her, but she had tipped over. The weight of her pack dragged her over the side. I watched in horror as she tumbled down into the ravine, bouncing off trees as she went. I saw her skull make a tangible impact several times as she tumbled down to the bottom and slid to a stop. I wouldn't know if she was still breathing or not as I called her name. She didn't move. I reached for the ranger in front of us and pointed to her unmoving body. He stared at her for a long time. I don't know if he was trying to see if she was alive or not. He told us to keep going up the trail to the top and he would check on her. I watched as he carefully made his way down to the nearly sheer slope. We kept moving forward as instructed. He was only halfway down when we made it to the top. I was a wreck. I was so happy we made it, but sad for Adrienne. I didn't hold out much hope that the ranger would come trotting back into camp with her on his back, saying she only had a few bumps and bruises. We started the fire and sat around in a stupor. Finally, Terry came over and talked to me. "Look, I understand she was your friend, but she was ours too," he said. "We need to work together to get out of here, for them." "That's so stupid. It makes no sense," I said with the remnants of a smile. It was then the ranger reappeared. He sat by the fire and didn't say a word. There was something in his eyes. It wasn't sadness, but I don't know exactly what it was. We knew she wasn't coming back. We rested for some time, then started on the trail again. "If you're following us, I hope you're being careful. Stay safe." Wow, this girl is something else. She wants me to be safe with all she's gone through. I hope I find her. I think she'd make a great park ranger personally. My guilty conscience jumped up on my back and yelled at me. "How can you sit around and rest when that girl just lost her friend and needs your help?" I knew it was right. I just didn't know why the other ranger was so careless. I struggled to get up, kick out the fire, and started after them. The daylight was dimming, but it only was 8 in the morning. I looked up and saw why. Storm clouds were overtaking the sky. Yet another reason I wished I had brought my backpack along. The raindrops hit like cold slaps in the face. Even though it was still September, out here in the mountains, the weather can change in a heartbeat. We weren't at the top of the hill, but in the middle was enough for the weather change to make me shiver. Now that we were out of the ravine, I tried my radio again, but it was still static. I knew there were some places where the radio inexplicably wouldn't work. I just hoped to escape the interference before it was far too late. The trail was clear in front of me, but that was little comfort when walking in open fields with no rain cover. All those trees I tromped through, and now in the rain, I have wide open spaces. I'd say someone doesn't like me. The rain didn't just pass like a spring shower. It poured so hard it became difficult to see even an inch in front of me. For a long time, I trudged through the rain. At times, it felt like I was walking in place. The mud was starting to cake on my boots, and then my salvation appeared. In front of me, on the trail, was a tent. I called out before I unzipped the tent and let myself in. I flopped to the beautiful dry floor, quickly turned and zipped the entrance back up. I breathed a sigh of relief, but a stench assaulted my nose as I did. I looked over at the sleeping bag. It was full. "I'm sorry to barge in like this, but I need to get out of the rain," I said. No response. I nudged the person in the bag. It tipped over to the side and rocked right back.
That's when I noticed the splotches of red that had soaked through the bag. I didn't want to see, but I pulled the top of the sleeping bag away from the person's face. The bad part was that they no longer had a face. It had been ripped away, and the neck had been gouged out. There were large wounds on the body as well. I tried to feel for a pulse, but my fingers went straight into the neck muscles. I figured there was no pulse to feel. I wiped my fingers on the sleeping bag and pondered why this person was covered. I know the animal who did this didn't gently cover up the person with the sleeping bag when it was done. I found my answer lying above the head on the person. It was a note. "I can't believe Terry's dead. I wish I'd never come on this trip. I wish I'd never let Devin bully us into turning down this damn trail." Where the hell is Devin anyway? When he stormed off on his little pity party, did he run across whatever creature has been stalking us? Is he sitting back in his tent now, enjoying himself? I don't know. We enjoyed not climbing up the face of a ravine, but we were exhausted. I mentioned stopping and camping for a little bit to the ranger. He looked at us and even sniffed the air. That seemed like a weird thing to do. But after that, he agreed to let us set up camp. He even told us to do it quickly as we could. We gathered wood for a fire, and then he told us not to bother because the rain was coming. I guess that explains the air sniffing thing. Our tents had been up for maybe 15 minutes since it started raining. It quickly turned into a downpour. We all offered the ranger to sit in our tents with us. He looked over us, one by one. It was pretty creepy. Finally, he said he would sit with Terry in his tent. Dean and I looked at each other with relieved expressions. The ranger is helping us after all, but he isn't someone I'd like to ever see again. He just acts too weird. At times, I wonder if he's even helping at all. I just closed my eyes, listening to the rain on the tent and letting it carry me off to dreamland. When the ranger ripped open my tent, he said we needed to pack up right now, that something was hunting us. We dove out into the rain, miserably packed our tents. He reassured us that there was a cave nearby that we could get to for shelter. As I was packing up, I didn't see Terry, so I went to his tent and knocked. When there was no answer, I went in and found what was left of his body. Something had torn him to shreds. I covered my mouth to avoid vomiting and ran the hell to the others. Dean and the ranger looked in and saw what was left of him. The ranger said he had left the tent to go to the bathroom, and when he came back, he saw a predator hanging around the tents. That's when he came to wake us. It must have already gotten to Terry. I pulled his sleeping bag over his head and wished we had given him a proper burial. But the ranger said the animal might be back for the rest of us, so we quickly packed up and left. I barely had time to finish this note. "Please help us. A cave? What kind of ranger is he? Doesn't he realize that this is most likely where some sort of large predator would call home?" I thought for a moment about what cave they could be talking about. I haven't been on this trail for some 5 years, ever since I found the kid here. Then it hit me. We were very close to a place where we found the kid. Why would he take him there unless... I jumped up so quickly that I nearly fell on top of the body, when I forgot that if I put too much weight on my injured ankle, I'm gonna collapse. I hobbled out of the tent and went as quickly as possible toward the place I swore I'd never see again. I approached the cave and my heart sank. Two backpacks sat just inside the entrance. I pulled out my knife and flashlight, then cautiously peeked inside. I felt a change in the breeze and turned to find the ranger staring at me. I looked him up and down. "You," I said. "The last time I saw you was when we found the boy." He said nothing. "It was never a random animal attack," I said. "It was you."
"How wonderful it was to watch you years ago as you floundered around looking for some predator that stood beside you."
"You son of a..." I pulled out my knife and held it ready. He paused, then smiled.
"Do you think that knife can hurt me?"
I looked at it. "Pretty sure," I said. "It's made of iron." His smile vanished.
"So you know what I am?"
I pulled out a bottle of brown water. "I made sure to grab some runoff from the rainstorm," I said. "It might not do as good as rust water, but let's find out." I opened the bottle and threw some water at him. He dodged it as though it was acid. At the same time, I swung with the knife. He escaped it with ease. "Why won't you show me your true form?"
"Because then, you would know what I truly am. And I'm sure you'd love to take advantage of vulnerable moments."
He swung and connected with my stomach, knocking the wind out of me. I recovered and swung the knife in a vicious downswing at him, which he easily dodged. I kept moving forward, stabbing and slashing at him, not giving them any chance to think or rest. I couldn't get close enough to connect. He was somehow way too fast.
If I hadn't been injured, I probably would have been able to close the distance between me and this thing. This thing is something I've only read about in lore before, but never thought was actually real. Unfortunately, I forgot about my injured ankle in the heat of the moment. I stepped forward on my good leg and faltered when I tried to put weight on the injured one. Instead of burying the knife in his heart, it went right through his left thigh. He screamed in pain and ran out of the cave. I took out my flashlight and started toward the back of the cave. There, I found a mutilated body next to a pile of bones. There was a note in her hand. I sat down, took it, and read. I can't believe how stupid I was not to see this much sooner. All the time guiding us was just a ploy. He never wanted to help us. He never cared about any of us or our safety. I need to write this quickly before he comes back. The ranger led us here and told us to wait here and that we'd be safe in the cave. He left us alone. Dean pulled out his flashlight and explored more profound areas into the cave. He found a large pile of bones. Off to the side of them was a pile of clothes. We ran toward the opening, but the ranger had already returned.
Still, you didn't listen,
he said, leering at us.
I told you to sit here. Now it's my home.
What are you? I said. He smiled for the first time since I'd met him. But his smile wasn't comforting. It was terrifying. I watched in horror as he changed into a giant cat-like creature. It didn't look quite like a panther or a mountain lion. He lunged at us with incredible speed. He grabbed my leg and tore a large gash into it. I fell into the floor screaming. Dean tried to defend me, swinging his knife around and holding it at bay, but it stalked around him and cornered him. He only had one chance. He looked at me with sadness and then ran past the creature and out of the cave. It looked at me and then my leg, then sprinted out after Dean. I know why he did it. He was trying to give me time to escape, but with my leg, there was no way. I couldn't outrun anything. What he did do was give me the time to say goodbye.
If you're reading this, I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry I led you to your death. If you somehow survive and make it out of here, please tell our families what happened. Goodbye. I fought back the tears as I read the final words of this brave girl. I limped out to the front of the cave and looked out as the rain stopped. It was like seeing a new world being born. I tried my radio and got an immediate answer. I gave them my GPS coordinates and told them to prepare for casualties. I'm still a park ranger even months later. I made sure that the trail was sealed off. I carry an iron knife and rust water with me at all times. I have the rust water and a squirt gun just in case.
The bones were removed from the cave and subjected to DNA testing. Aside from this group of victims, including Devin, several others had gone missing in the park over the years. The official version of the events was that a rogue animal had been hunting people. I was told it was best for my career if I didn't reveal the true nature of the predator. I still search for the creature and post signs everywhere to look for an older ranger wearing a uniform with no patches. There's a number to call if anyone spots him. It's my cell phone number. Occasionally, I hear reports of a large cap limping on its hind leg. I try to make my way to that spot as quickly as possible, but I have yet to catch him. I posted this story in memory of that brave girl, but also as a warning. Never go on an unposted trail and beware of those you meet in the woods, even if they wear a uniform. They may just turn out to be something we can't comprehend. A creature, hidden and lost from history.